Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, also covering the team at The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A very exciting day, Drantzer. It's Wednesday, so we've got the crossover coming up in a few minutes here. Jason Buchla is going to join us, and it's a Canucks game day. The Casey DeSmith era starts tonight against the Colorado Avalanche. Lots going on. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Doing very well. Excited for the crossover. Excited to watch a heavyweight tilt tonight at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, a new look Colorado Avalanche as well, right? With the not just loading up, but like reshaping their team that they did at the deadline.
And looked pretty good last night, trouncing the Flames after falling behind in the first period.
A romp, a 6-2 romp over the Calgary Flames.
And also just across the league, a great night of hockey last night.
I
sat, watched a ton of games, ton of hockey. That Kraken Vegas third period was through
your
the
Kraken.
Roof.
Tough night for your Kraken.
That's probably it.
Yeah.
And they had their shot. But you know what? I also thought, I was watching that game, and like I think both of those teams are at a high enough level to warrant playing a game after game 82. Like I was watching that game just thinking, this right here, this is the best argument you'll find in season for a play-in.
Mm.
Like, finishing sixth outside the top three of your division shouldn't be enough of a reward to have to avoid winning game 83 to for sure clinch the playoffs, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, I know Gary Bettman has stomped on this idea repeatedly, but I've always been baffled by the pushback that it lessens the meaning of the regular season, because in my mind, it just does just the opposite, right?
Yeah,
it turns winning
for
your division or finishing top three in your division into way more, something way more important than it is now, right? When it's just, yeah, you're one of eight versus being able to actually avoid the play-in. Look at how differently we regard the standings in the NBA already.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Where it's like you're either a playoff team or you're a play-in team.
Totally.
And, right? And everyone understands the difference. It's like playoff team, you're a real contender, or you might just be a play-in team. And again, that hasn't lessened the importance of the regular season. It's made us more important.
Well, and within the stakes of the season, right? Like that comeback victory for Vegas, don't get me wrong, was still big,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's even bigger if it's to like tie the Kings again in points and avoid the play-in, right? It's even bigger because staying ahead of the Wild is going to be the first sort of rung of the play-in, right? Where you win one, you're in, or you have to lose two before you're out, right? I mean, huge swings in leverage, and it would be like what the Buffalo Sabres are doing in the Eastern Conference right now would be the biggest story in hockey. You know, there'd be a possibility of Alex Ovechkin in the playoffs still.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that it would alter what we're looking at, what we're talking about, I think would be a ton of fun.
Now, there's always the questions of the unintended consequences of, does it slow down the trade deadline, right? Because
oh, no, we're not going to get the Adam Henrique blockbuster. Like, the deadline's already dead.
Unless you're the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, okay.
Then you go get your next stud player for the next 6 years.
And here's my guess. Rutherford, right? Vegas at the deadline. They're still going to find ways to get things done.
Yeah.
Right? It just is what it is.
Before we get to Donnie and Dolly with the crossover, and we'll talk more about this later when we do the whiteboard for today, but some news from the Canucks front office yesterday announcing extensions for some key members of their front office, assistant general managers Cammy Granato and Emily Castonguay, and also a promotion and an extension. So Ryan Johnson, no longer the assistant to the general manager. He has been upgraded to assistant GM outright. So now three assistant general managers in the Canucks organization below general manager Patrick Alvin. Obviously not a big surprise, given that we saw the extensions for Jim Rutherford, than the extension for Patrick Alvin. And just in general, when you look at, you know, we always talk about it as the work that Rutherford and Alvin have done with this team, but it's not a two-man show. It's a bigger front office than that. And obviously you have to be pretty happy with the work the front office has done, especially over the last year.
Well, especially bouncing back as a unit from last season.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, it's important in my mind anyway, to remember just how, you know, difficult and dysfunctional things seemed. Right, how frequently the seams showed last season. this year, you know, Derek Clancy departed, and this has nothing to do with Derek Clancy. It's not like a negative about him, but I do think the structure that they've gotten into this season has helped. I think there's very clearly defined roles, right? You've got Cammy Granato overseeing scouting on sort of both sides, almost like an executive level player personnel portfolio. And you've seen the hits. Like, you've seen the difference with a substantially unaltered pro scouting department, you know, under Cammy's leadership. And internally, Cammy gets a lot of credit for the way that the club has found efficiencies up and down, pro scouting, amateur scouting, just the growth of those departments. You know, you've seen some departures. Rick and I were able to report on one last week in the scouting department, in addition to these extensions. So I think you're seeing sort of this front office, you know, having had extensions at the top, those are trickling down, and you're seeing sort of them really putting down sticks, roots, in terms of how they're operating. Long overdue for Ryan Johnson to get a promotion, right? The last season, for all dysfunction, like, the one thing that worked really well was Abbotsford. Jeremy Colton's also obviously a rising star in this organization's estimation, and RJ's work as Abbotsford's evolved, and then also contributing on the pro scouting side, you know, his familiarity with Dakota Joshua, for example, you know, making a real impact this season. And then obviously the Canucks have gotten a ton of contracts done over the last couple months. That's Emily Castonguay's department. And they've, you know, made a lot of progress untangling what was a really gross cap situation that they inherited just 2.5 years ago.
Well, and just a pretty significant contract getting done very recently. So that's a nice feather in her cap as well. So, yeah, no surprise whatsoever to see the key members of the Canucks front office getting those extensions. Again, Cammy Granato, Emily Castonguay, and newly minted officially assistant general manager Ryan Johnson getting extended. All right. It's Wednesday. That means it's time for the crossover. Let's do it. You see them every day, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV, and they join us here, as they do every week, for the crossover. From Donnie and Dolly, it is Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall. Fellas, what's going on?
Well, big game tonight, Rogers Arena. Yeah,
yep.
There's that. Makar versus Hughes, a whole lot,
Yeah, the start of the Casey DeSmith run in net. How confident are you guys feeling about the Canucks' ability to deal with the absence of Thatcher Demko here?
Well, look, a perfect world, Thatcher Demko's healthy and Casey DeSmith isn't in goal tonight, in a perfect world. But they have played so much better defensively over the last 4 to 7 games, I would say. So that would have to give you a whole lot of confidence. But, man, is it going to be put to the test tonight? They look so good, the Avalanche in Calgary. And they've also won 4 games. I like, though, what Tocchet had to say about this drill, and Thomas, maybe you know more about this specific drill that they're doing right now, and that they're repeating practice after practice, that, and it seems to be having great results. And anybody who's involved in coaching and hockey, that repetition, if you can take that over to a game, that's a big deal. It just, I think a lot of people wondering where that drill might have been earlier in the season. But whatever works. And, hey, look, I think this is just a great test tonight. It's one thing. And they've played good teams, no question about it, during this 4-game win streak. But this is the big test tonight. And will that defense hold up with Casey DeSmith in goal? The other thing Rick Tocchet said yesterday, and Thomas, you were there, was, you know, sometimes when your backup goalie is in that and you like him a whole lot, it's subconscious, but you just maybe give a little extra. And I agree with that.
Well, I just want to say something about DeSmith. I think the Canucks having him this year was really good. And I'll tell you why I'm saying that, because late into the summer last summer, the Canucks were still thinking of Seelovs. He was coming off that World Hockey Championship. He was doing really well, and they were thinking about it. And then all of a sudden, they get DeSmith. And one of the reasons they got DeSmith is because DeSmith's agent, who also represents Demko, was trying to move him out of Montreal and thought, hey, you know, he played a pretty vital role in Casey DeSmith ending up in Vancouver, kind of helped broker that deal between Vancouver and Montreal. So you got a veteran guy, right? You know, as opposed to a young guy and, you know, Spencer Martin, we talked about this on the show today, but I mean, Spencer Martin as the backup didn't work, right? The Canucks didn't have a lot of money for the backup position, cap-wise, and then they went out and got Casey DeSmith. They got him, no matter how they got him, but he has certainly been... I know everyone's talking about the Minnesota game, but you got to forget that, because earlier in the year he was really, really good. He's gotten a lot of points in the games he's played, but it's just a really good situation for the Canucks to have a veteran guy like this, who, by the way, played his career high 38 games last year for Pittsburgh. So it's a kind of good that, you know, Demko gets hurt and they got this, you know, guy with 153 games of NHL experience. So that is really good to have him back there.
It's good to lose one of the best goaltenders in the
league. I never said that. It's not good to lose him, Donnie, but it's good to have a backup. How about if the backup was Seelovs or Spencer Martin? What would you be doing then?
Well, Donnie, it's not so much that it's good to lose your main goalie. It's good that the Canucks have a backup, and they trust him so much they only played him 3 times in 17 games after the All-Star break.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah. Hey. Thank you.
Hey, and Donnie and I had a big question today on the show. Is yesterday Tocchet availability for 20 minutes? Nobody asked him. Did you overplay Demko? And is that played a role in the injury? Nobody. Were you not there, Thomas?
I was not there, no.
He was actually not there, no.
Did you not ask?
I was not there.
He was here. It was during our show. It was during our show.
We find it fascinating that
I've never seen you at the rink. How are you doing this?
Hey, hold on a second. Tatum,
were you not there?
He was whining about it.
I've never seen you there.
Listen. Hey, I'm asking you why nobody asked Tocchet if
there.
You overplayed him in 11 out of 13 starts February.
Take it up with Batch.
I'll be honest with you. I'm not here for the backseat driving on it. We were asking Tocchet, both me, David Quadrelli, there was like a run of us, three straight availabilities the week before he got hurt, asking him about the goalie usage. How do you wedge DeSmith in, given how the... So, you know, I'm not going to show up and be like, well, now that an injury that I have no reason to believe is related to overuse has occurred, how did you mess that up, Rick? Like, that's not... I was asking about the usage because I thought it was a little bit interesting beforehand. I don't think there's an obligation to go dunk on the coach in a scrum and be like, explain yourself, man.
Not
a thing happened.
Just ask, like, hey... No one's saying dunk on him, Thomas, but just to ask, hey, did it play a role in his
It would have been interesting to hear his response.
You know what, it would.
Interesting to hear his response. His response would have been, you know,
unrelated.
We work as a group here, and, you know, Ian has a say, and we all felt it was the right call at the time. At a time when they were struggling, you put your number one guy in. I know what the call would have been, but it would have been interesting to hear.
Yeah, you're right. No, it would have been an interesting question. I should have asked it if I'd been there.
Next time, be there and then ask the question
this,
as well.
This, by the way, is why no one blocks shots for me.
You are there most of the time, Thomas.
I am there most of the time.
Thomas, you are there most of the time. Yeah, that's why I asked.
It is frightening. And I know I haven't been in the room for a long, long time, but I was there for a long, long time.
Yeah.
During the sports day page and Sportsnet days. And I remember, like, the best advice I ever got as a young broadcaster was from J. Paul McConnell. If you ask a tough question and somebody tells you to F off, well, that's a great answer. Mm. You can play that for the next 3 months and people will never ever forget it. You might get your lights punched out, but it'll be a good clip.
Good clip.
So one of my rules is if I carve somebody, I better be there the next day. And these days, the Canucks are doing so
Cody
well.
Gallagher did that.
Yeah.
Never have to show up.
Yeah, the Canucks are doing so well these days that I don't feel quite as much push in the morning.
Mr. Negativity.
The other question with Demko is, you know, we can look back at how much they played him, but what do you do going into next year? I mean, Rick, you're saying it's so lucky that they have DeSmith in-house as the backup. Can you go into next year with Seelovs as the backup, or do you need to kind of build in? Because this isn't Demko's first injury, and I'm not necessarily saying he's injury prone or anything like that, but do you need to kind of build in spending a little bit more on a veteran backup going forward now?
Well, Casey DeSmith is at $3 million, I think, and Thomas helped me out, I think, around $3 million. And Seelovs has been kind of up and down, inconsistent this year in Abbotsford.
Mm-hmm.
And so look at their UFA list, guys.
Oh, I know.
I know they're trying to re-sign Hronek right now. But, so DeSmith's at 1.8.
Yeah, very close.
So, yeah, okay. But listen, I said late twos.
You were right
there. Listen, how are they going to re-sign everybody? I just don't. Lindholm, Bluger, Joshua, Zadorov, Myers, Cole. I mean, they got some massive decisions to make. How much do you want to spend on a backup? You know, I mean, these are all questions they got to ask.
The backup one's interesting to me, Rick, because Demko's 28, right? He's going to turn 29 next season. And we all know what he can do. Like, we all think, all the people watching think, any Canucks fan thinks, this guy's one of the best human beings at stopping pucks shot by NHL players on the planet, and with cause. But, you know, his career high is 64 games. That season ended with an injury that, you know, he sort of carried into the next season. He's played 50 now, or 49, and got hurt before the end of the season. Like, you know, this is effectively a guy who next season is going to be a 29-year-old going into a season who has never really held down a workhorse, you know, load of games without, you know, while being available throughout. At some point, don't you need to bring in a guy to give him more meaningful rest during the season, especially given how important the concept of him being at his best in meaningful games is for this team?
Absolutely. And I wonder if that guy's Casey DeSmith, going forward, just because, first of all, Minnesota game aside, you throw that out the
bunch
door
of pucks off skates and stuff, like whatever.
And, it was just so strange. He just seems so incredibly, first of all, he's pretty good at stopping pucks. But secondly, he just seems incredibly low maintenance and really, really popular. And Rick Tocchet, I'll refer to that clip again yesterday, talked about how much everybody likes the guy, and he, you know, stays out at a time at practice and all of that. And I just wonder, maybe he's the guy. I don't think people would have many problems with that, unless this next stretch doesn't go all that well with Thatcher Demko out.
It's a good point. It's a pretty important audition for a pending UFA, right?
And the backup goalie is like the backup quarterback. He's got to have the good character. He can't whine or bitch or complain, and he hasn't done that. He hasn't done that, and you got to give him credit for that. He just went six
Smart.
Weeks. He just went 6 weeks with only three starts, and you never saw him sulk or whine or cry. That's a sign of a good character guy in the dressing room, and that's what you need from your backup big time.
So with the Elias Pettersson deal done and dusted, the trade deadline has passed. A lot of attention now turning towards the other big RFA for the Canucks, Philip Hronek. Rick, what are you hearing about? We heard on our station Patrick Alvin last week saying they've tabled an offer to Philip Hronek. What are you hearing right now, Rick?
Well, obviously, he's only 26 or 27, sorry. He's an RFA. Arbrights currently makes 4.4. You want to lock him up. He's been good. You cannot deny he's been good since he got here. But here's some issues that have arisen. His career high for points is 38. Did that twice in Detroit. So right now he's at 45, but you can say he's played most of the year with Quinn Hughes, power play time. I'm not comfortable giving him more than Quinn Hughes. I don't know how you could. We talked about, Donnie and I talked about comparables yesterday. Well, Abbotsford's Devon Taves, $7.2 million, all right? And he's had over 50 points twice.
Mm-hmm.
The Hronek camp, they've got comparables over $8 million. Mikhail Sergachev, as Thomas and I talked about yesterday, he's won at 8.5. And he never had more than 40 points before he signed for 8.5. You're going to have to pay for minutes, and you're going to have to pay for points. He's a right shot D. He's been really, really good this year. But boy, does going into the high sevens and eights, that I don't think that's something the Canucks want to do.
Interesting that you say he can't be paid more than Quinn Hughes.
No, he can't. No, there's no way, Don.
And yet when we brought up...
Ah, stop it.
When we brought up him or Elias Pettersson making $3 or $4 million more than JT Miller, I know there's an age factor there. No problem at all.
I know. He's 5 years younger, Pettersson. Are you kidding me? No.
But I think
that amount.
If you're the Canucks,
Donnie,
you're the Canucks, and you know what Quinn Hughes is
I hate to take Rick's side, but there's no, like, Elias Pettersson was never going to sign for $8 million. You know what I mean? So it's just like, you can say, well, JT Miller makes that, but that was just never in the cards. Whereas, yeah, Philip Roenick has comps going above that, but it's not like 7.6 would be completely out of the ballpark like $8 million would for Petey, right? So I think that's the difference.
Except for this, that this guy wanted Petey to be making 13.
I never said 13. Quit putting words in my mouth.
12.5, 13.
I said 11 or 12.
No problem with that at all.
And they were talking 5-year deals that would have been well over 12 too, Don. So it would have been over 12. It was almost a 12.
Just
we were close.
Just let's we should note that at the time he was Pettersson's age, JT Miller's career high in points was 56. I think that's probably the explanation, Don. Right, like Pettersson's a 100-point guy who just signed at the age of 25. JT Miller at the age of 25 is career high.
I listen to your show all the time, and you love Elias Pettersson. He can't do it wrong, and I agree with that. He is a fabulous hockey player. All I'm saying is that this guy says that they can't pay Roenick more.
They can't.
Than Hughes, and yet you wanted them to pay Pettersson $5 million more a year than Bill.
Quinn Hughes is in the Quinn Hughes is in the Norris talk. The guy's you know, what did you say? It went over my head.
Well, I know a lot of things do. the Miller versus Pettersson argument versus the other argument with Hughes and Roenick.
Well, first of all, Quinn Hughes might win the Norris this year. There's a guy that is in the Colorado lineup tonight that might have a say in that. But I don't feel comfortable with Roenick making more than Hughes. I'm sorry, Don. I don't. Just don't.
I think the other, and in, you know, Donnie, as you're saying, where's the walkaway number here, and can you pay him more than Quinn Hughes? I mean, I do think it's a very fair question, especially since so much of Hronik's success, you can argue, is tied to Quinn Hughes, right? And that's not going to hurt his arbitration
case or his
numbers. But we haven't seen Hronik really play away from Hughes for any extended stretch here, so we don't know what it would look like.
We've seen a couple hundred minutes, and the results have been mid. What about the cap growth, though, Rick? Because this is the other thing you have to factor in, right? Like, Quinn Hughes signs for 7.85 in an $81.5 million environment. Cap's going to be $87.5 million next season. The equivalent, 9% of the cap. I mean, that's 8.5 right there. Like, literally, the Hughes contract in an $87.5 million upper limit environment is 8.5. Like, it's 8.427, whatever, 8.43.
So Thomas, you're saying pay him over eight?
I think this is one of those where it's very clear that the market for a player who's performed like Roenick has and has put up points like this, 8.5 to me is not something we should have sticker shock. And I think there's going to be teams lining up to pay players of his quality.
There is sticker shock.
That amount
is previous high. Thomas, his previous high for points was 39.
I understand that.
You want him to go from 4 to 8.5?
He's going to be second in the NHL in 5-on-5 scoring among defensemen at the end of the season. He's going to have 55 to 60 points. He's going to be one of the plus-minus leaders around the league, and he's going to lead this team in 5-on-5 ice time. And here's the biggest one for me, Rick. Like, you get to an arbitration hearing, one of the things you get to present as evidence is like the individual contribution to the success and or failure of a team. Well, that's like a one sentence argument for Roenick, right? Like, before I came, this team had 83 points. By the time I arrived and became their minutes leader 5-on-5, we hit 83 points in February.
But so, didn't you just say, Thomas, though, that his numbers away from being partnered with Hughes,
Quinn Hughes are mid,
aren't all that great?
Sorry, mid. Listen to you, Rick.
I'm accepting your categorization of their
show.
They're mid.
I accept that there's some buyer beware that we should rationally have here and that the Canucks should rationally have here. But I don't know how you make the argument, like a compelling argument against an arbitration eligible player, for him to be paid. Like, this guy's got it, going to have the best arbitration case that we've seen from a defenseman since PK Subban. I don't know any way around that, Rick.
What? You made a good point there, Thomas, but I'm just trying to get back at you for those really outstanding numbers you gave when you compared Miller and Pettersson's age versus versus Pedersen. That was really good.
Thank you.
You put me in my place, so I'm just trying to...
I'm sorry. I meant to block shots
keep
for
that
you.
In mind.
I will say, I think the one... Like, I think we can all agree this is a complicated situation.
It is.
And the one thing I'll say is that...
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Not that I'm projecting that they'll trade him or anything like that, but I think you look at Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin and how this front office has operated.
Yeah.
At least for me, I have the confidence that they're not going to make a mistake just out of fear of losing the player, right? Like, I think they have a number,
yes.
And if it pushes above that, I think they're probably willing to take bold action in that case.
Yeah, don't ignore the flag plan effect, though.
You know what? Jamie, you said the best thing.
Greg's ignoring you right now.
Hey, no. Jamie said the best thing out of everybody. If you outprice yourself, you will be gone.
Yeah.
There's no question. Jamie said it. If
you,
it's 8-5, Thomas, they can't do 8-5. If you give him 8-5, Thomas, how are you going to re-sign all your remaining UFAs? How?
Well, they're not comparable to Hronek. Like, you're going to have to make...
But, dude, how much money do you got left?
It's like $13 million. It's going to be tight. It's going to be tight, though, whether you get him at 7.25 or 8.5. You know, like, we're talking about a $1.3 million swing. That's a rounding error. In an $87.5 million cap environment. You know, like, we're talking about a difference of 1.5%. I get what you're saying. It's an extra fourth line player, but it's not a world apart, Rick.
You know what? One thing he has... Thomas.
No, please.
You had your say. Hold on a second.
Yes, you're right.
one thing that everybody talks about, and, you know, Cale Makar is coming into town tonight, or is in town and will be on Rogers Arena ice tonight. Right-handed defenseman.
Yep.
How many years are the Canucks looking for a stud right-handed defenseman? They get one, and they're going to let him go? So maybe, as crazy as it sounds, those big contract numbers aren't out of the question when you combine everything. By the way, you used the word, Jamie, complicated earlier.
Sure.
If you want to hear complicated, watch the replay of our show and check out Kelly McCrimmon's answer to us asking him about them massaging LTIR.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
It was 22-minute answer, and oh, my. But Kelly went off.
I thought you were going to say...
People are criticizing Vegas right now.
I thought you were going to say complicated was Rick trying to figure out the cough button at the beginning of the show. I caught that.
Oh, well, there's that, too.
Yeah, but that was Henderson. That wasn't me. That was Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
That was another mistake by Henderson.
I got a couple texts here I want to read to you guys to sign off with in the Dunbar Lumber text line. First, somebody texted in that Drance has become house radio because he's not willing to hold Tockett's feet to the fire on overplaying Thatcher Demko. So I thought you'd appreciate that one.
You either live long enough to be the hero or die.
That's where we are now. Drance is house radio. And this one from Mike and Willoughby. Hronek without Hughes would be like Dolly without Donnie. Shots fired. Shots fired right there, Rick.
See, he'd be just fine, so I don't know if I buy that.
I think they're just looking. You're always sitting on the right side,
Donnie. That's true. Dolly. That's true.
You're the right side guy.
You're the right side panelist.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
All right, fellas, this was great. As always, thanks for doing this. See ya.
Always fun, guys. Thank you.
That is Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall from Donnie and Dolly, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Czech TV. That was a good one.
How did I get cast as the guy saying that they got to re-sign Hronek at 8.5 over the course of that argument?
The funny thing is, I think we were all like arguing in like a four-way vector there, but I think we all probably pretty much agree. You know what I mean? That there's a price and they shouldn't go above that. I think maybe the disagreement is... how likely is he to get that elsewhere, right? Which, to me, is the whole crux of what... That's the crux of what the negotiation between him and the Canucks is going to be, too.
And we've talked about it, and I think it's interesting, right, that the comps Rick's throwing out are ones that we've already discussed,
yep.
Right? Our point was, Devontae's 7.25, that's kind of a floor. And Sergachev 8.5 isn't necessarily a ceiling. And that's what makes this such a difficult one, right? Sergachev signed that 8.5 in a no-tax state, granted with a ton of playoff success, but coming off a 38-point season. Hronek's going to be coming off a 55-point, at least, campaign. Maybe more if this Canucks team gets scoring again. It's going to be a really tricky one to do. The Canucks and Alan Walsh definitely have their have to get their compromise hats in order.
We can get a little bit more into it later. I know there's something I wanted to pass along in the whiteboard from Satyar Shah on Philip Hronek. So we'll do that in the final segment. But we'll take a break now. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet in the next segment. Jason Bukala coming up at 1 o'clock here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People Show with Bik Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at dunbarlumber.com. As a reminder, we just did the crossover with Donnie and Dolly in the first segment. You can check out the whole segment, the crossover, on Sportsnet's YouTube channel. It'll be up shortly, I am sure. So make sure to check that out. You can see every edition of the crossover on our YouTube channel as well. All right, we got a lot more to get into today. Jason Bukla will join us at 1. We'll do the whiteboard at 1:30. Right now, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet on a game day when his team is taking on the Colorado Avalanche at Rogers Arena. Here is Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, obviously, Colorado was a great team, but I don't care who we're playing. That I like the way we're playing. Can we keep trending in that direction? Play without the puck. Obviously, we're playing a highly. It's a you know, obviously they had a great game last game. McKinnon's a handful. They got their, but I do like the way we played against them in Colorado. So we should have some confidence because of that, and because of the way we're playing.
The way that you guys are kind of set up here with all these home games, from the coaching staff's perspective, like with the extra practice time, the way you guys have played over the last four games or so, like how good of a spot is the coaching staff in right now with how you guys are working with the players?
Well, you get more teaching time. You know, when we're condensed, you don't spend as much time with the players because you got to be conscious how much you're giving them. You know, there's games after games after games. Now that they're spaced out, you know, there's four or five guys in the offices, individual teaching. You have more time with a player when you have this type of stretch. Plus, you know, we'll get to practice next couple of days. Some stuff that we can work on. So it's obviously every team goes through that wherever they get that break in the schedule, and ours happens to be in March.
Tyler Myers was out skating again, second day in a row, but he stayed out late. So is it the same six defensemen tonight?
Yeah, I think we're going. I actually had to talk to Mizey here. I haven't talked to him yet. But we haven't really made our final decisions, but you know, it's prudent though. I do want him to get a couple of practices in, but you know, he could have played tonight, I think. But you know, I'll talk to him today. We'll see how it goes.
JT's done a nice job this year taking on matchups.
Yeah.
Obviously McKinnon leads the National Hockey League in scoring and there aren't many tougher matchups. But when you task JT with those sorts of things, like do you think it brings out the best in his game?
Yeah, you know, when I put him against a guy, if the guy's on the ice, he's looking at me like, get me out there. You know, you like that about him. You know, he's taken that upon him. He wants to go against the McKinnons, the McDavids of the world. But the way we're set up with Lindy now here, Petey's a damn good 200-foot player too. So it's not critical. But yeah, there's some matchups that I do like Millsy out there against a bigger, stronger guy, of course.
Hughes and McCarr is something we've been watching since both guys came into the league. Can you size up that matchup a little bit and just how well Quinn has been playing the last few games?
I think Quinn's last three, four, like, you know, before that, he was a little, he'll even tell you he didn't like his game. I think when he's defending without the puck, the other stuff comes. You know, when he's thinking too much offense, I think it's sort of gets in trouble. But I think he's been terrific defending the last three, four games, like really hard. And the way he does it. I mean, obviously he's different than bigger defenseman, but he's quick. He knows he's got a good stick. And then when he's got, you know, what's good defense when you have the puck on your stick? You know, he always has a puck on his stick, so that's good defense too. So, You know, I think he's recharged too. He's played a lot of hockey. There's been a lot of games in February, and I think this break has helped him the most.
In that matchup, the two of them?
Yeah, I think anytime you get two marquee guys, it's fun to watch. But for me, you got to be, you know, I've always said this, even with the interviews, it's about the teams. You got to be careful. It's not Makar against Hughes. It's Colorado against Vancouver. You got to think that way. They just happen to be, you know, two of the best, or not the best defense in the league.
When do you think Dakota might start skating with the group again?
He's been skating a lot. I don't know. I really have a timetable. I mean, whether it's, what's it, the end of the week here? What is this, Thursday today? What's, no, Wednesday. You know, I don't have a timetable, but, you know, hopefully in the next little while, we'll get him. But like I said, I want him healthy. So if we have to take an extra 3-5 a week, I'd rather do it now with a guy like him.
Hey, Rick.
Oh, yeah.
A couple from me.
Sure.
You talked a bit about Lindholm yesterday. He's in 17 games here. Yeah. He's 60% in the circle, like a career high. What about the value, not only tonight, the value going against the Avs down the middle, but especially into the postseason? Can you speak a little to that value of a guy who, he's great in the circle, but the way he reads the game, his game management seems to be there. We focus obviously on the offense, but
sure.
Everything else that's there.
Well, play without the puck is what I mean. Listen, he'd like to, you know, I think he's going to get offense, and he will get offense, but to me, the play without the puck, there's the subtleties that I really watch him where he covers for somebody. That's what I see. And when it comes to the dot, 60%, I have the same attitude with power play. It's, you know, you lose a draw in the neutral zone. Okay. Yeah, you want to win every draw, but that's the lesser of the evil. But when he wins the critical ones, that's what the 60%, it's probably higher in critical times. When we really need the draw, that's when he really shines. It's like a power play. Like, power play percentage to me is when the game's on the line. You know, you make it 6-2, power play, gets, you know, it's good for the stats, but it's 3-3, 6 minutes left. That's when your power play wants to score. And that's the, you know, the pressure. It's the same thing with the dots, 4 minutes left. I saw that in this trip. We had some critical face-off, you know, situations with tired people, and he won that draw. So that's the way I look at the pressure of when guys are going in there.
Trade deadline's always a tenuous time for players. There was some speculation regarding Lindy.
Yeah.
As a coach, when it passed, do you speak to him at all just to make sure that his head is in the right place after going through something like that?
I spoke to him on the trip before the trade deadline to tell him, you know, my feelings and, you know, what was being said. So, and I think he appreciated it. I think, you know, and he's played better. Maybe, I don't know, some players act different around the trade deadline. I don't know. But as a coach, you try to support your player, you know, because there are times that, you know, there might be a trade rumor or there might be some kind of truth to it. This one wasn't, but there has been times as a coach, you got to make the guy, put him in the best possible mind frame for sure.
Hey, Rick, just in regards to Demko being out for the next few weeks, does that change the team's approach at all regarding strategy? And how do you use that adversity to help motivate the team during this next stretch?
Yeah, it's a good question. No, I don't think it changes strategy at all. You know, it's not all of a sudden you play better defense or we're going to go to a 1-4, you know, to protect. No, you play the same way. You know, we still have the same philosophy. Hopefully the goalie can play half the net. We take the backside away from him. But no, we don't change our feeling because of who's in net.
And if you guys continue to widen the gap in the standings during the stretch, do you look at potentially limiting the minutes of a Hughes, Pettersson, and keep them fresh for the playoffs?
I don't think. I think about tonight. That those discussions will happen, whatever happens. But right now, I don't think that way. I just think about Colorado first period, you know, our pre-scout tonight. You know, the information I give him, I don't think anything in the future about that.
I know you've addressed the importance of Carson Soucy before, but through every game, it seems like it's always a positive result. What has he meant to this team?
Yeah, I think I've said this before, like he's a calm guy, calmness. You know, if things get a little hectic out there, he seems to be a common influence to a lot of guys. It seems like whoever plays with him, his partner, he calms that partner down, you know, and I think that's why even him and Mizey, they had a good run there before he got hurt. They were really good together, Myers, you know, and now you got him and Kohler.
Same thing. They've done a nice job. So, yeah, he's just a guy that low maintenance guy. He's a pleasure to coach. Really is. Well, I mean, we got a better, you know, when he's in the lineup, obviously we have a better chance of winning. So is it a coincidence? No, I think he's just a really good hockey player that understands our system and understands what we need from him. I think that's and that helps us win.
A little while ago, it felt like we were talking a lot about discipline and stick penalties. You know, for the past few games, it feels like your team's done a much better job at having that discipline.
Yeah.
How important is that tonight, especially against a team like the Avalanche that has all these game breakers on their power play?
Well, it's been huge for me the last five. It's been before that, you know, it's been driving me crazy because you just can't. But to be honest, we started a drill 5 games ago. Then since we've done this drill, it's a stick on puck drill, and it seems since we've been doing it, guys aren't taking stick penalties. So it looks like we're going to be doing this drill every day, or as much as I can.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. Yeah, he's found out how to instill discipline into his team over the last 4 games.
Rick Tocchet and the magic stick drill. It's a book filled with childlike wonder.
You know, just had to start doing that drill. There you go.
Sounds like a Willy Wonka sequel.
Steps into a glass elevator.
Except if it was a Willy Wonka book, like people doing the drill, a lot of people doing the drill would die.
Yeah.
In bizarre scenarios.
Willy Wonka.
It's an underrated part of that story.
Just a bunch of garlands.
A lot of those kids died.
Did you prefer the child murder part or the part where all the adults in this boy's life sit in their bed all day?
Yeah.
While he's exploited by industrial.
What, like, a story.
Like proto-industrial child labor laws.
Children's classic. Not to mention the Oompa Loompas. That's a whole other kettle of fish. What's going on there?
How many remakes do we need?
There's a lot going there.
Canada. There's a lot going on with the Oompa Loompas. Okay, but magic discipline drill or not, magic stick drill or not, you know, as much as Rick Tocchet talks about not changing the way they want to play in front of Casey DeSmith, which I think is completely right. You can't reshape your identity or all of a sudden, you know, go into a defensive shell just because your backup goalie is in for a stretch. You know, we talked yesterday about them being such an elite 5-on-5 team. And over these past 4 games, the best way to mitigate the weakness of the penalty kill has been just don't take penalties. And I do think strong discipline, if there is one thing you're trying to emphasize with Demko out of the lineup now, like, that's the way to shelter Casey DeSmith. Not changing how you play, but being disciplined and trying to stay out of the penalty box as much as possible as well.
It's a big one. It's a big one. I mean, Canucks special teams have been really flagging, right? And that's sort of why I think this lack of penalties across 4 games takes on such significance. You know, when you look at how this team has played 5-on-5, there's so much to like, you know, over the most recent sort of even extended segment of games. And yet, you know, I think it's worth noting, as impressive as the Canucks have been over the course of this win streak, for example, like, since the All-Star break, you're talking about a team that's been, you know, 583 point percentage across 17 games. Some of that's bounces in that they're not getting them. They're not getting unlucky, but they're not getting some of the, you know, not as many of the long range or unscreened wrist shot goals that were this team's bread and butter at times this year. But I think a lot of it's the Lions' share of it is that their power play hasn't been winning them games. And there have been a few that the penalty kill has cost them.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, especially important tonight against an Avs team that has Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon and
Kale
McCarr up high. You know, that's as tough as it gets, especially against not Demko.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a huge factor tonight. Some other notes there from Rick Tocchet. Says that Myers could have played tonight, but I guess because of the depth on the blue line that they have right now and just wanting to ease him back into the lineup, he won't be in tonight. But that's the update on Tyler Myers and his return from injury. No timeline on Dakota Joshua. And as if to emphasize that fact, Rick Tocchet had to be reminded that it's Wednesday, not Thursday, but no official timeline on Dakota Joshua. That's going to be a huge addition when he gets back into the lineup. I mean, look, Connor Garland obviously deserves a ton of praise for what the third line was able to do. for so much of the year, but Joshua was a big part of that as well. And, you know, Garland, Lindholm, and Pod Colson, I think we've seen flashes, but it hasn't been that same consistent drumbeat of production as when it was Garland, Bluger, Joshua. And then the other thing is we're talking penalty kill. We're talking about, you know, the team looking small up front and being a little bit surprised they didn't address that at the trade deadline. Joshua is a huge component of, one, the penalty kill, but then also, obviously, the physicality and the size element for this team up front.
Yeah, it's the other part is, you know, as good as, I mean, that Canucks third line has been so vital for them, mostly because it's the one forward line that's reliably driven play away from Quinn Hughes, right? Mm. So, you know, it's a key engine for this team. But the fact of the matter is that we haven't seen it with Lindholm at any point. And so getting Joshua back, you know, hoping, right, obviously, that there's no performance impact. And I don't think there would be from a play driving perspective, but part of Joshua's effectiveness this year has been as a goal scorer.
100%.
So a hand injury is not ideal, given, you know, the source of supporting offense that he's been, you know, a reliable contributor to over the course of this season. And yeah, so, you know, getting him back, making sure there's no performance impact and giving him a chance to build some chemistry with Garland and Lindholm, you know, that to me actually feels vital.
Assuming he goes right back in there, which
he will.
Would seem like the likelihood, right? Given what he was doing with Connor Garland for the entire year.
At this time of year and given how unique he is relative to, you know, the construction of this team otherwise, I don't think you lose your job for
lose your job. But I mean, I'm looking up the lineup. I'm looking at Ilya Mikheyev playing with Miller and Besser and wondering if that's a spot, right? Like, I'm not talking about demoting him to the fourth line. I'm talking about, do you try him somewhere else because you have a piece like Mikheyev, who, as we know, has not scored in an awful long time. But having said that, I still think it'll be back with Garland once Joshua does get back in the lineup. And as Rick Tocchet said, no timeline on that. We will take a break. Jason Bukala, our guy from Sportsnet, former NHL scout, will get his thoughts on the post-deadline lay of the land around the NHL right now. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The hotline is brought to you by Dispatch Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. The first call, the only call.
I appreciate Mike and Tawasin's connecting the idea of a magical stick drill to the groin watch.
Groin watch.
Yeah. The magical stick drill, you know?
Yeah.
To get the most out of it, you've really got to feel it.
Okay. All right. Are we getting Books on the line here? No, Dom's working on it. Save me, Books. Let's get out of this before we get in trouble.
Wow.
But 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can get more great thoughts, just like Mike and Tawasin had there, into the 650, 650 Dunbar Lumber text line. All right. And we now have, apparently, live from Mexico, our guy. He's part of Sportsnet's NHL coverage and a former NHL scout. He is Jason Bukala. Books, you enjoying some post-deadline R&R?
It's a working vacation this week. I wish I was spending more time having coronas around the pool, but unfortunately, college free agent season is upon us. So I've been working that end of the business this week.
You're scouting the hot prospect from Guadalajara.
Yeah. Yes. No. Well, I'll tell you what I am doing. I'm scaring everybody away when I take off my shirt on the beach. I'll tell you that much.
I'm headed to Mexico in a couple of weeks, and we'll do the same. Looking forward to it.
Awesome, man.
All right.
Well, except for the scaring away part.
Trade deadline has passed. And, you know, fairly surprisingly, at least I think in a lot of people's eyes, Canucks didn't do anything. Nothing on the actual day itself. Of course, they had made the Elias Lindholm acquisition significantly earlier. What did you think of the Canucks' decision to stand pat, hold on to all their assets at the deadline?
I'm okay with it. You know, I think that given... Obviously, you know, like on the four, when it gets to our desk and we're starting to announce what we're hearing or, you know, project certain things, and then you look around and you see what other people are doing, you know, I think that you have to stick to some sort of a semblance of a plan internally and externally. You know, your group clearly wants you to be the best version of yourself, but at the same time, as an organization, we do really do have some grade A prospects on the horizon here that can really fill some voids, entry-level deals, as you guys all know, especially with the extension of Patterson. These guys need to play, right? Like, you need to get guys on those deals, those entry-level deals. And I'm happy that they were able to stand pat a little bit. And you know what? A lot of noise around Lindholm, and, you know, they did their business early, guys. This is a good team. They went through a little bit of a, you know, bleak period there, if you want to call it that. But let's just keep plowing ahead in the right direction as a group, and we're going to be okay, I think.
Which team in the West is scariest today that 3 weeks ago, you know, we might not have said so about that about? Who's improved the most?
Wow, that's a loaded question, isn't it? Because it wasn't the West, like, aggressive, you know. It was an arms race. It's the best way you can put it, for sure. I mean, I think Tanev going to Dallas is a sneaky move.
Yep.
You know, they're able to promote some people internally, like Logan Stankoven, who I know Drancer for sure. You love that kid, and
yep.
You know, they got some momentum with some internal prospects that can play NHL games and have it back right now. But I think adding Tanev was a sneaky move on their back end. I really like their D. I love their goaltending. I think Dallas is, you know, positioned very well. You know, I'm hesitant to say Vegas because it just doesn't feel right in the pit of my stomach, but I have to go there. You know, timing is what it is. I did what Kelly McCrimmon advised for us to do, and that is go look up on Google and see how long it is for a lacerated spleen. And the best I can tell for just us guys, yep, that are going to be going out for chicken wings and beer, if we have a lacerated spleen, we're talking 3 months till our own life gets back to normal. So I want to know what that looks like for a contact sport, you know, when people are running around 100 miles an hour. Time will tell. But I have to say that obviously their decor is exceptional. Edmonton, though, I really liked adding Henrique and Carrick, guys that can play both center and the wing. Carrick can play heavy hard at the bottom. Henrique can play in the middle, or he can play in the three. And he wins, you know, the majority of his faceoffs. So, and now as I'm foaming and I'm just sitting here talking about it, like, you know, Winnipeg bringing in Toffoli and Monahan, who, you know, a lifetime ago had some real good synergy as juniors together with the Ottawa 67s. You know, they didn't get to play a lot together in Calgary because Monahan was hurt most of that time. So that'll be interesting for them. But I think that's a nice add as well.
I appreciate whenever anyone brings up how upset I was as the 2020 draft unfolded that Logan Stankoven dropped every pick after 35 and texting you, Books, like, what are people doing? What's going on? This is insane.
Yeah, I remember you and I were texting back and forth. And of course, that's when I had gotten, you know, punted out of Florida at that time. And there's a couple of players that were, you know, it is what it is. Florida's a juggernaut. They did a hell of a job there. I'm not going to throw rocks at a glass house, and I'm certainly over it. All I would say is that Ken Cole and everything he brings, so good on the kid.
With Vegas, you know, you're saying it's hard to put them in that improved or scary category because something just doesn't feel right. And, you know, we'll see what they look like if they get Mark Stone back when Hurdle is there now and Hanifin. But, like, can you put your finger on what is off with Vegas? Because, yeah, they lost a piece, you know, Riley Smith, but it's still by and large the same roster that looked fantastic winning the Stanley Cup last year. And yet, after that hot start, they've never really looked like a top echelon team for a significant stretch this season.
Yeah, I hear you, Jamie. I mean, they're a 500 team since the beginning of the year, you know, like, for a long time, they're a 500 team. So, not sure. I guess you could, you know, they call it the hangover. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's you know, the coach is hard to play for there. Like, he's a hard coach. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think that there's different times in the season that hard coaches, I'm not going to suggest that they lose the room, but what I am going to say is that, you know, there's times where I'm not as motivated to produce that. I'm not the best version of myself because I don't want to hear it today. I think that's kind of human nature, isn't it? Like, if you're, you know, we don't want to be like, you know, pushed every day. Like, just some days I need you to kind of lay off me a little bit. And I'm just speculating. I'm not, you know, I'm spitballing just like you guys are. But I think that they're going to be fine come playoffs. The one thing I will say to you is that as good as their D is and as good as Aiden Hill's been, you know, on balance, I'm still, you know, can they run it back with the same goaltending again? And I guess the short answer for now would be yeah, probably. But, you know, what happens if things start creeping in and they're not as detailed and they're not as hard to play against, and he's got to make 5 more grade A saves in a game? Those things matter.
How much does the uncertainty that the Canucks now deal with in net, right? And I don't mean the next 2 weeks. I just mean what a late season goalie injury does for your confidence in the Canucks goaltending mm-hmm. edge, which I think, you know, we projected them to have in just about any first round matchup, you know, because they can't meet Winnipeg in round one. What does that mean to you in terms of how you view this stretch run and how you view Vancouver's place in the Western Conference pecking order?
It's not ideal. I don't want to sugarcoat this. I mean, anytime a goaltender has a lower body injury vis-a-vis an ankle or a knee at this time of year, it's not ideal. That's not going to go away. So you just have to accept that right out of the gate that these types of injuries are going to linger now until hopefully June, right, when we're still playing. And, you know, the thing of it is that I think the KC Dispens has been more than capable. I think everybody would agree with that. But here's the thing, guys. Traditionally, Casey DeSmith has, as soon as he gets to about 28 games, and people can look it up, historically, this goaltender, when he gets too much volume, all of a sudden, you know, it drops off pretty rapidly. Like, he just, you know, he's got like a threshold, and then it goes away. So he hasn't really got to that threshold yet. This is a really good team in front of him. I think he's a really solid two. I'm not nervous about this situation in relation to him. But I am nervous in relation to how long our starter isn't the best version of himself getting towards playoffs, and that threshold starts to creep into, you know, our backups game. So it's not ideal. I, you know, it makes me think more than I wish I had to think right now, but it is what it is. So what are you going to do?
Jason, you know, now that Elias Pettersson is signed and locked up long term with the 8-year extension, a lot of discussion right now around Philip Hronek, and it's such an interesting case because obviously he's playing alongside Quinn Hughes. Just in general, if you were another team, you know, and maybe saying, hey, is this a guy we should try to pursue in the offseason? Should we try to acquire this guy? How difficult is it to evaluate a player when they spend so much time next to, you know, one of the game's elite players at their position, like Quinn Hughes?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great, great example by you, because what we have to then look at is the historical, right? Like in Detroit, when Detroit was, you know, really bad, like, the, you know, at the beginning of their rebuild, if you will, and you look at his statistics, I mean, I think there was a year in there he was like -32 or something like that. But that's a team concept stat more than it is in relation to him. Now, when they started to get good, guys, Detroit, Hronek was part of that solution. So it's curious that they let him go, but anyways, they did, and, you know, he landed on your doorstep, and the rest is history. But he was starting to play the game the right way, and everything was trending positive for me anyways before his injury in Detroit, before last year's trade deadline. So I take pause, and I say that he's probably three-quarters of, you know, if I don't have a Quinn Hughes, and who does? I mean, how many teams, like, he got, you know, how many guys have a Quinn Hughes? Not too many, right? So
there's only one.
75% out of, yeah, and if there's 75%, if I can get a Hronek at 75% of what he does in Vancouver for me in a trade scenario, is that going to be good enough for you? And I guess my answer would be absolutely, because I think Hronek is, you know, the best version of himself right now, but he'll fall off a bit without the right partner. I think that's just common common sense that that would happen.
So building that kind of expectation in, right? Okay, we know he's not going to look like that because he's not going to have Quinn Hughes here, but we still really like the player. You know, that's probably how a lot of teams are going to look at it. Does that equal, you know, $8-plus million AAV, which you look at some of his statistical comps, you might be able to ask for?
Yeah, I'm out on that. You know, I'm not. I'm leaning more somewhere between Uyghur and you know, 7-7 or something like that. And, you know, again, not looking at the infrastructure and trying to see how I could fit all the puzzle together now, you know, obviously I'm going to probably accommodate for a $500,000 kind of maneuver there somewhere. You know, like, you have to kind of bend a bit. But I'm not going over 8 on this. Like, we have to still build the team. We still have to, you know, keep plowing ahead with a lot of other assets on the horizon too. Like, before you know it, like, everything's going to sneak up on us. It always does, doesn't it? All of a sudden you're looking at a guy like that's got 3 years of term left, and then all of a sudden it's 2 years and it's 1 year, and I gotta pay that guy another 11 because Hughes is going to go to a ridiculous number someday. And so do you really want 8 at 8 on Aronic? I'm saying no. I'm saying if you love it here and we love you, you fall somewhere in between some other comps, and I'm saying Uyghur and somebody else, and please be satisfied with that number. And I keep my fingers crossed.
With what you're seeing out of Hronek Hughes, how would you assess how additive Hronek has been on that pair?
I think that he's partly responsible for the uptick of his partner as well, if that's possible. I think that he insulates him to a degree as well. Like, he further allowed, like, here's the thing with Hughes, you know, and to a degree, it's kind of like what Colorado has going, well, like, these guys, their partners, when they complement them in a certain way, like, Ronick and Hughes can move pucks together. They can, one guy can, join or as an extra layer, or Hughes is going to skate the puck. There's such a complement there with the way that they think and play the game that I do believe that one elevates the other. I think Hughes elevates Ronick more, but I do believe that there's an uptick in Hughes too with that partner. So that's interesting, because you're going to have to incorporate that in the value of his contract as well. Because if you're getting more already out of your best player, arguably your best player in Hughes, you know, that's a discussion for another day, but let's just say that.
Sure.
If you're getting more out of him because of Hronek, then that brings more value to Hronek's contract as well. And I have to consider that in my process.
It's an interesting one. Like, we were trying to come up with what a comparable Canucks package would have been if they'd made the Gensel trade, right? Now, that Carolina package is pretty complicated for fans to understand, right? Because you've got three prospects in it. I mean, it looks so different than our typical deadline deal. And one thing I'd sort of been saying is, you know, Garland to me would be like the guy who's equivalent in value to Bunting, right? Both 100-plus points the last 3 years, 5-on-5, you know, $4.5 to $5 million price range, 1 year of difference. That would be the comp. And I got a lot of fans pushing back on that. They're like, Garland's better underlying numbers. And the thing is like, Bunting's, for some, I think, analysts, the fact that Bunting played with Matthews for most of his seasons and Garland hasn't played with, you know, either of Vancouver's great players is like a reason to believe that Garland is the more valuable contributor. But in the minds of most NHL teams, the ability to put a guy with your best player and have him help, a la Hronek Hughes, is actually like desirable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see it that way?
Well, that part is desirable. Well, I'm seeing it both ways. I hate to sit on the fence because it's not really my style, but I'm kind of sitting on the fence. Well, here's one thing I would say. Bunting, call it lightning in a bottle, but you have to perform. Like, because you're slotted beside Austin Matthews, let's not forget, there's been some other players this year that have been slotted beside Austin Matthews and haven't had the same success that Bunting had.
Yep.
So, like, you get the slot, but you have to perform. So I'll give him that in his Toronto days. Here's the thing I wouldn't give him, though. He couldn't play for Rod Brind'Amour. So, you know, let's give Connor Garland some kudos here. Like, your coach demanded something out of Garland, right? He demanded, because I think he was on the way out the door at the beginning of the year if there was a partner to be had. That's just my, I don't know that factually. I'm just saying, I think that if somebody would have called for Garland at the beginning of the year, he might have been the guy that was available. Now, he's bought into the coach. The coach has bought into him, and I think it's a real nice fit. I don't know that Bunting could play for your coach, if that makes sense. Mm. You know what I mean? Even if you put him up high in the lineup. So it's a curious one. It's I do like that comparable, though. I'm just so happy that we didn't go down that road and give up Lakaramaki or Willander or any of this, because what they got back in return, guys, in Pitt with the three forwards that they returned, I think one of them's an NHL player. I don't think all three are NHL players. Maybe one and a half. I think that, what's his name? Vakanen or up front there, the Finnish kid.
Koivinen.
I think he's going to be the... Yeah, Koivinen, pardon me, playing in Liga at the Carpat. He's going to be the guy that, for me, is the guy that has the best chance to play. The other two guys are on the come see. They're maybes, and I'm happy that we didn't go down that road, especially if there wasn't going to be a contract in the drawer for Gunson.
Last one on Hronek here, Books, because we know the Canucks gave up a lot to acquire him, right? First round and also a high second round pick. I'm not trying to, get their trading Hronek things going here, but let's say it came to it in the summer, his price was too high, they have to shop him. Is his trade, considering, he's had a great season, it's next to Quinn Hughes, but he's helped his team win and really turn the corner, but he's also due for a really, really significant contract. Is his trade value up, down, the same? Where's his trade value relative to what the Canucks gave up to acquire him?
Really interesting. I believe it's up. But I'm gonna tell you this. It's also gonna depend on which draft. So let's imagine this. They get word in Vegas the week leading into the draft, and they're floating that out there. Okay, if it's gonna be the 2024, and it's to a team that's in relative position to contend. Let's just say going back to Detroit, just for argument's sake. Okay. This isn't gonna happen, but I'm just using it as an argument's sake. If I'm Detroit or somebody in that territory. Yeah, I'm like, okay, I'll give you my 2024 first, but if we got to punt it to 2025, how about this prospect and if I have an early second for next year? And there's going to be a lot of strategy involved depending on the year that the transaction's made. And I know that's kind of a convoluted answer that everybody else, our listeners are like, what's he talking about? I'm just saying that not every year looks the same on the horizon right now. So I think for this draft cycle, his value is higher than the acquisition cost in relation to just putting pen to paper. But down the road, I think that it's going to trail back to be more on plane with where he was in Detroit when you guys picked him up.
One other thing I wanted to run past you, Jason, is Vasily Podkolzin has come up and played a stretch here for the Canucks. The counting stats aren't there, no points, but this is his first taste of NHL action this year. And, of course, confidence was such a big buzzword for Podkolzin. He did not have it in training camp. What are you seeing from Vasily Podkolzin? Is it, because I think sometimes we're straining to see the positives, but I don't want to completely negate that he's coming up and playing a consistent shift at the NHL level either.
Yeah, so what I'm seeing is the first few things that I like to tick off, and that's, does he skate? Does he think? Does he compete? And, relentless compete. I would say that his skating, this computer in place, I would say that his game on pucks is hectic right now, which is just kind of that's to be expected when you haven't played NHL games this year. So where do I see him? I see him. I'm hoping that he turns into a Holander type of a project for next year. It's not going to happen this year. I'm hoping for that, but I have to be perfectly honest, guys. I'm not sure. So I'm not sure where this is trending. I'm not so sure that he's capable of giving me the secondary offense at the NHL level that I'm hoping he can give me. Is he just going to be a checker? And if he's only going to be a checker, then we're going to be selling at decreased value, obviously. Or is the player going to come to us and say, this isn't a fit for me? So a lot of moving parts there. I think you can plug him in, though, in an energy role.
And, Jason, Jonathan Lakaramaki, obviously, a torrid pace in the second half of his SHL season. Clearly the best U24 player in the SHL at the age of 19. Season's wrapping up. I don't know. Did it end up wrapping up yesterday? I don't think it
no,
did.
No, apparently he's going to the playoffs.
They survived. Yeah. So, but at some point here, Orebro will be out. What sense can you give us of the process? We know that the Canucks would love to bring Lakaramaki over. We also know that he's performed at a high enough level that the Swedish Federation might want him for the Worlds. What sort of sense exactly. can you give our audience of the process by which the push and pull between teams and the Federation in figuring out how to deal with the end of a top prospect's European campaign?
Well, I mean, you know, nobody's going to say it, but when you're sitting around having a coffee in the morning, the Canucks would love to have him over here and love to be able to have the confidence to insert him in some sort of a role, if possible. They would love that to happen. You know, even getting American League games, whatever. They, you know, you'd love that. But, you know, I have to say that the best thing for his development, further development, is to stay the course over there. See what happens at Erebro. But if he can get to the men's worlds, I mean, what a massive accomplishment that would be. This would be such a it would be a nice bow on it for, he's coming out of World Juniors MVP. He's elevated, played back to his identity. His compete is much better. All the things that we've been really happy about him with, let's just end it with a really strong world championship representing your country, if that's the case, and then regroup next year for Vancouver. So, you know, he's the belle of the ball, you know, prospect-wise right now, but it's okay to wait, guys. So that's where I would go with that.
Jason, great stuff. As always, man, enjoy the time in Mexico. We'll chat next week.
Okay, Jansen, we'll share selfies, and yours will be way better looking than mine.
I doubt it. Have a good one, buddy.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for having me. Take care.
Of course. That is Jason Buccolo from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout. Makes a good point. Just from like a vibes narrative on Lekaramäki to go from where he was last year to with representing country at the senior level at the World Championships and wrapping up your season that way. Maybe not exactly what the Canucks would want, but that's a pretty great opportunity for the kid as well.
Yeah. It would be really cool. And give us something. You know, the weird thing is, though, the Canucks going to the playoffs, it's not like we're going to be watching the Worlds.
No, it's true.
In previous
years.
We're
not going to be like, who's going to the Worlds for the Canucks?
Yeah, no. Those days are over for at least the next...
For this year.
For this year.
For sure, for this year. Yeah. And hopefully in the future as well, but for sure.
I guess not
for this year.
Even for sure.
Well,
for
no,
sure.
Because when you lose in the first round, you can go over, right?
That's true. So, and you know, you got a clinch here.
What are you talking about? You got a clinch?
You got a clinch. You need 6 more points.
Can you imagine?
No, they're making the playoffs. Don't get me wrong.
What a story.
That would be terrible. He's trying to play us off.
Yeah.
What are you doing? This isn't Oscar's music.
No, Books is in Mexico.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah. Now I understand.
Mariachi.
It's very nice. I like it.
Yeah, me too.
We just like an NBA game where they play music during play. We just run this the whole show.
Don't tempt me. Don't tempt me.
How long?
Dom's DJ set underneath our show.
How long could you listen to this before you started doing stuff like, I've got a spicy take for you. Throw some verde on that.
Me Muy forever. Caliente. You for like 2 seconds, apparently. I think we just answered it.
Right, okay. That's a big enchilada.
Yeah. All right. Final segment coming up. We'll do the whiteboard. It is Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650.
Tequila.